Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to have a very, very fascinating guest. His name is Bill Nolan. Bill's background is absolutely amazing, but more than anything else, if you've ever seen the movie Logan's Run, he's the man that put that movie story together, and there's a lot more to tell. So we have a little bit of what you might say the dark side. His book, his brand new book, is called The Bleeding Edge, Dark Barriers and Dark Frontiers. So we've got a little bit of everything and some really amazing people that contributed stories to go into this book. And Bill, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's fun being here.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was so thrilled to find out about you because I knew you years ago.
Right.
And we had interactions years ago, and then time goes on, people move. I left California, and I knew members of your family, and they moved, and just, it was amazing to me when I was in the car driving to the post office, and I hear this interview with Bill Nolan with one of our local stations that I used to broadcast on. So I immediately, as soon as I got home, I said, gee whiz, I've got to call and see if this is the Bill Nolan of Logan's Run that I knew when I was in California. Sure enough, it was you. And they said, yeah, he's right here in Vancouver, Washington. And I went, you've got to be kidding. So that was Mike Lonergan, who was the talk show host that's had you as a guest. And Mike's just a wonderful guy, and Mike and I used to broadcast together. So I called him up, and I said, Mike, can you give me Bill's number? And he said, sure. So, and that's how I got in touch with you. Bill, you've been one busy man since I talked to you so many years ago.
Well, I'm still busy. I'm working right now on a novella, which would be about a 23,000-word novella. I'm about halfway through that, a brand new one, for a new collection that Arkham House wants to do with me. They published Dark Carnival by Bradbury and a lot of other wonderful books. They came to me last weekend and said, we'd like to do a book of yours, and so I'm working on new stories for it, the first of which is this novella. But I'm also working on 9 other books in different stages. Some of them are almost complete. Some are just in the note form. That'll bring my book total up over 90. I'm shooting for 100, and I think I'll make it. But so far, I will have over 90 books to my credit, so they do pile up.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is really something. Now, I wanted to share some information about you. You've produced 20 scripts for films and television. You've just talked about the amounts of books. You're close to 100. You've had 180 stories published.
Right.
500 anthology appearances.
You've 560, actually.
Whoa.
Amazing.
And then 700 nonfiction pieces. One of your books, in fact, was about Steve McQueen. And
that's right. I did 2 books on McQueen, one on his racing and one on his life, yeah.
Yeah, the one on his life is the one I'm remembering.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got 50 poems you did. You've gotten all kinds of awards, and I want to share this with my audience. You got the 2010 Life Achievement Award, and you got the Living Legend Award, and that was including the Horror Guild, Edgar Allan Poe Awards, and the Author Emeritus Award, that was for the Science Fiction Writers Group, Silver Medal Award of Excellence, Citation for the American Library Association. I mean, it goes on and on and on. You must do nothing but write.
Well, you know, I taught creative writing on an adult education level at a local college when I lived in Bend, Oregon, before I moved up here. And I used to tell the students in my classes, I said, the one thing you must do 2 things, I said, if you have talent, that's fine. If you don't and you do these things, you're not going to get anywhere. But if you have talent and do these two things, you're going to go places no matter how much competition there is out there among other writers. I said the two things are you have to write every day. You have to write something every day for at least an hour a day. And don't tell me you can't find the hour because you can get up an hour earlier. You can quit. You can, you know, stop your poker game every Thursday night or do something to get that hour every day. That's a minimum. You should write more, but at least an hour. And the second thing, you should read across the board. You should read classics like Crime and Punishment. You should read Batman comics. You should read across the board, across the cultural span, because all of that is grist for the mill. That all goes into your brain and comes out in a new form in your writing. You can't write out of a vacuum. So that was the way I taught my class, and I think that's true. You do have to write every day.
Now, that's something else that I need to mention, because Logan's Run, and our engineer today, he said, "Oh, Donna, I love Logan's Run." And I said, "Yes." And this is the man that helped put that together. Now, it was a bestseller. It's been printed 16 times by Bantam. And then you went on from there, though. You've got Logan's World, Logan's Search, Logan's Return. Now, this became...
I just finished a new book called Logan's Journey. My latest novel is Logan's Journey.
Wow. Now, Bill, with Logan's Run, there may be some of my listeners that may not be familiar with it. I felt that book, that movie, when I saw it, and I was just stunned because I thought this is really telling about the future.
Yeah.
Give us an idea what stimulated this, and when did you write Logan's Run?
Well, we have to go way back to 1963, which is a long time ago, and I was on my way to UCLA to do a lecture to a science fiction class that was being held in the adult education level in the evening, and so they asked me to come up with a concept of to show the difference between science fiction and social fiction. And I said, well, if it's social fiction, a man turns 40 and runs off with a Las Vegas showgirl and leaves his wife, and that's a story. If it's science fiction, maybe, I said, and I didn't have anything on paper at this point, I just said, maybe a man turns 40 in a future world where you're not allowed to live past 40, and it's a population solution. Now, you kill everybody off at their 40th birthday, and if they don't want to die, then you send a killer man after them, a kind of a future cop. So mm-hmm. I got the idea of writing a story called Killer Man, Leave My Door, about this man that turns 40, and he was a former cop himself, and so he runs from his own people. And that's all I had, and I took it to George Clayton Johnson, who had done Ocean's 11, the Frank Sinatra movie, a lot of television. I said, what do you think of this idea? And I told it to him, and he said, I love it. We ought to do it as a screenplay. And I said, no, we should do it as a novel first, and then a screenplay. We'll get a double sale out of it. So to make a long story short, we did exactly that. We wrote the novel first in 3 weeks in Malibu, at a rented room in Malibu, sold it to MGM for $100,000 a year later, and MGM produced the film, and since then Logan has been running for over 40 years in all kinds of editions. Right now Blue Water Comics is bringing out a series of Logan's Run comic books. I have action figures in the works that will probably evolve, Logan action figures. I have radio adaptations on the fire. I have Warner Brothers ready to make a new version of it with today's technology, so it seems like Mr. Logan's going to be running for a long time.
Well, I'm glad he's got a slender build and he is ageless, because as long as that colored film keeps rolling, whether it's via the old-fashioned reel-to-reel or on a DVD, it's an absolutely amazing movie. Now, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
Because with Logan's Run, you had so many concepts that were in that story that, again, were very futuristic. People had their own food supply, and there was this aquarium. I mean, there were all of these different modalities with computers and different aspects that came
right
through. This, to me, sci-fi is so fascinating. It's like Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry and his writers that goes on. They think outside the box. What stimulated this? I really would like to know about the plastic surgery machine that takes away the wrinkles.
Who wouldn't? I could use it myself.
But anyway, you have these concepts, and so many of these things have evolved.
Well, what you do is, my wife told me the other day, she's down in California and I'm up here in Vancouver. Well, we'll be getting together again soon. But anyway, she's down there now. She said, you know, you created the Internet. And I said, what? And she said, yes, you did. Back in 1967 when the book came out, I wrote it in 63 and 65 and came out in 67. And we reduced the death age, by the way, to 21 in the book, because it's much more shocking to just be out of your teens and you suddenly have to turn yourself in for euthanasia under government control. That's much more shocking than a 40-year-old man, so we brought it way down. The MGM people couldn't cast a whole movie with 21-year-olds, so they moved the death age up to 30, but I'm told that the new Warner Brothers version will bring it back down to 21 again, so we'll see. All science fiction is, Donna, is taking what is happening today and extrapolating it into the future. You take a trend that's going on. People are eating too much, and so you create a future world of fat people or whatever. Take a trend and then move it forward. So my wife says, you created the Internet. And I said, what are you talking about? She says, the thinker, the computer that rules the world, that's in everybody's home, that controls life. She said, that's a version, that's a prior version of the Internet. I said, well, you may be right. That's the job of science fiction. That's what Ray Bradbury does with Fahrenheit 451. You take and you project what is now into the future. Now, we could be wrong. We don't know how the future is going to be because we aren't there yet. But science fiction writers do their best to extrapolate and think, well, what could happen if? The Watts riots were going on during the week George and I were writing Logan's Run down in Malibu. The Watts riots were going on, and youth was running wild and burning buildings. And I said, wow, I said, you know, this is a youth culture, and youth could take over. And that we were writing the book anyway. We would have written it without the Watts riots, but that was sort of like a sign to us that we were on the right track, you know.
Well, it's just amazing to me. Now, Ray Bradbury, first of all, you have collected a number of very, very talented people, and they submitted these stories, which I think would be perfect for Halloween. If you wanted to scare the whatever out of somebody, sit it down and read it out loud, and, I mean, you'll have the willies. You won't want to go to sleep until the sun comes up. I just think some of these stories are absolutely incredible. But Ray Bradbury, now, you at one time had a phenomenal collection of his works, and now I believe it's at a university somewhere.
Right. It's at Bowling Green in Ohio. Bowling Green State University in Ohio has the collection, and they add to it every year because I said, look, I'll donate it to the university on one condition, that you do not break it up, that you make it available for any student that wants to use it, and that you keep adding to it year by year as Ray brings out new material so that it's not dated. And they swore they would do that. And I talked to one of the curators a couple of weeks ago, and they said, yes, we've been adding to the collection every year, so it's up to date. So I said, good, that's what you promised to do. Yeah, that was 1981 I took it to Bowling Green. It was getting out of hand. It was filling a whole corner of my house, and I just didn't have room for it. It was 28 full boxes of material that I drove. I put them in the back of a station wagon, drove them from here, from California up to Ohio. I didn't want to risk mailing them. It cost a fortune, for one thing, to mail that much. And I didn't want to risk anybody else taking them up. So my wife and I got rid of this station wagon and filled it with Bradbury books and took it up to Bowling Green. So that's how that happened. Yeah, it was quite a collection. It was I don't know how many items, 2,000 or 3,000 items over a 34-year period. And Ray was very kind to give me a lot of it. Ray actually gave me the original hand-corrected manuscript for Fahrenheit 451, which is worth several thousand dollars now. That's part of the collection up there. So.
Oh, my goodness. Now, he's still alive, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's. In fact, this is interesting. This month, in about a week, I'm driving down to Los Angeles with two of my good friends to attend Ray's 90th birthday. He'll be 90 years old on the 22nd of August. And he's still writing, and I just read a new piece he wrote that's just beautiful about the loss of his favorite cat who died and what it meant to him. A beautiful piece of writing that he just finished. So you can't slow a good writer down. I intend to keep writing till I'm at least 100 years old if I make it that far.
Well, I just think that these people you've collected in this book that have such a phenomenal background. They're just amazing individuals. Now, when you were putting this book together, How did you find out who wanted to contribute and who didn't?
Well, I know, you know, I've been writing over 55 years, and I've known an awful, I've gotten to know an awful lot of writers. I know enough writers, good writers, from Bradbury, Matheson, people like that. I can just pick up the phone and say, hey, I'd like a new story from you, and they say, yeah, sure, fine. And so it was easy to assemble because my co-editor, Jason V. Brock, is very knowledgeable. He knows a lot of people. And between our contacts, we didn't have any problem filling the book. Well, our criteria was excellent material only, no second-rate material, and all original, never printed before in any form. That was very, very important. We got a teleplay from George Clayton Johnson, who did a lot of work on Twilight Zone. He was the one that co-wrote Logan's Run with me. We got a nice unproduced Twilight Zone script from George that we put in there, and we got a nice story from Bradbury, never been printed. We got a little playlet from R.C. Matheson and Richard, his father. The two of them did this little weird Grand Guignol play. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun putting together, and if the people who are listening to this program want a copy of The Bleeding Edge, they can contact J. Sonny Productions on the Internet, and they will have copies for sale. J-A-S-U-N-N-I, J. Sonny.
Now, Norman Corwin is a man that in 1938, there was a classic film, I believe it is, A Plot to Overthrow Christmas.
That was his first famous piece of work. Norman is a very dear friend of mine. He's in the book, as you know, and he's 100 years old this year. He'll be 101 next year. I went to his birthday. Well, I congratulate him for I wasn't able to get down there for it, but I sent a thing to him. But anyway, he's my only 100-year-old friend. I don't have any other 100-year-old friends. But he's still doing fine. He's in a wheelchair now, but his mind is still fine. And as far as I know, he's still doing some writing. And it's amazing to know people like Bradbury and Norman Corwin. These are amazing people, and they elevate your life. They bring your life up. They make you a better person for knowing them.
What intrigues me is that in this book, you have a composite of horror stories, bizarre stories, Frankenstein type of stories, which I guess you could classify under the horror. This is a genre that is extremely popular, and your writing has not always gone to that genre, but there are so many people that have really done well with it. What do you think makes a good horror writer? I've heard Stephen King say one time that he scared himself half to death when he was writing. I've seen some of his stuff. No wonder.
Well, I know Steve. I know he's a friend of mine, Steve King. I went to a convention with him, and he said, come on up to my room. We'll share a beer and talk about writing. So I went up to his motel room in the convention, and he had a six-pack of beer there, and we sat there drinking and talking. And I asked him, I said, Steve, I want to know something. I'm going to ask you a question on behalf of all your readers. How do you create real horror? What makes it work? What makes people believe in the horror stories that you write? And he said, well, it's a very simple thing. The first thing you do is create three-dimensional characters, a real father, a real mother, real children with a real background living in a real place. And you establish that very strongly in the beginning of the book, and then you take them into the wild. You take them to the haunted Overlook Hotel in The Shining, or you take them out into outer space. Or if you create strong enough characters, if they're believable enough, if they're three-dimensional, the reader will go anywhere you want the reader to go with that family. And he said, so I create the family, and then I take them places. And I said, okay, that makes sense.
Fascinating stuff. Well, he is loved by many.
Yep.
And that your works have covered such a unique, eclectic area.
I've worked in over a dozen genres, yeah.
So when you're doing this, is it easy for you, because I know some of our listeners desire to be writers, for you to go between fiction and nonfiction? You have 9 projects right now that you're working on.
I'm working on 9 books and several short stories right now, yeah. Well, yeah, it's easy and it's not easy. Now, some people can write prose and they can't do scripting, and some people can write scripts and they can't do prose. I've been fortunate enough to be able to do both. The way I talk about it, like you're driving a four shift manual automobile, and when you're down in one gear, you're riding one way, and then you shift up into another gear, and that's another way of riding. When I'm doing scripting, I can't do any interior monologues. I have to do everything in the way of visual action or dialogue. That's the only thing you can do in scripts. Everything is either visual or spoken. So that's the way I write it. And when I'm doing novels, I've done 13 novels and 180 short stories, as you say, then I can get into the mind of the character. I can have him thinking and reacting to the things that are happening to him. You can't do that in a script. So you have to shift mental gears. You have to go up into a different gear. And I've been able to do that, and it seems to have worked pretty well.
Now, Bill, I know George Clayton Johnson.
Right.
You have him featured in your book. He wrote a teleplay, and it's called The Grandfather Clock.
Right.
This man is so interesting because people don't realize that when you're watching shows like The Twilight Zone or Star Trek or some others, there's more than one writer here. There is a lot going on behind the scenes to polish, to really bring a good script forward. Because,
right,
like you said, there's a knack to doing a script. But George Johnson was one of the writers for The Twilight Zone. He really got a lot of respect for doing that.
Yeah.
Then he went on to write for Star Trek, Kung Fu, which I absolutely love Kung Fu.
Yeah.
And he also wrote the script for Logan's Run with you.
The novel, not the...
novel. I'm sorry.
We did do a script together, but MGM rejected it and hired other writers. But he did. We did do the novel together, and his name is still on the novel. George also won an Academy Award nomination, which is something I haven't got yet. But and that was for Icarus Montgolfier, right? A story of Bradbury's that George adapted for motion pictures, which received an Academy Award nomination. So yeah, George has some amazing credits.
Yes, he's just... And interestingly enough, the photo you have of him, he looks like he fit into a kung fu movie.
I call him the oldest living guru from the monastery, the last of the. He's got this long beard and everything, and he's a very eccentric character, but I'm very fond of George. He's a real character.
Now, you have in this book, and when I started reading the different pieces of material, and they're all very different.
Yes.
The thing I noticed right off the bat is that there are mostly men here, but you have a couple of gals in here, Nancy Kilpatrick.
Excellent writer.
Oh,
yeah.
And in the story she has in this book, it's about a goth world, so people would have to get the book so they could read it. But let's talk about Nancy, because she really is into horror stories.
Well, Nancy Kilpatrick is one of the most erotic women writers going, too. She writes very erotic material. She's written books under pen names that are almost total eroticism. But it's not cheap pornography. It's not gratuitous sexuality. It's very well thought out, well characterized people involved in sexual activity, so that we were delighted, Jason and Brock and myself, we were delighted to get her story because we wanted a good erotic story in the book, but there's so much bad erotic writing, we weren't going to put anything in that wasn't top-notch. So when Nancy sent us this story, we said, wow, this is great. And Lisa Martin did this story about the spiders down there where this she has to go down to this basement full of spiders. I had chills up my spine. I said, man, we got to use this story. That's Lisa Martin. No, we look for women writers. Unfortunately, there are not as many out there as there are men writers, but we definitely want, and we're doing a new book together called The Devil's Coattails. We're editing another book together, much like Bleeding Edge, and we're definitely featuring several women in there because women have a special viewpoint that they bring to writing that I love. I used to collect many women writers from Katherine Ann Porter to Shirley Jackson, and I do love women's writing. But unfortunately, it's a pretty much male-dominated world in terms of writing, so it's harder to find good female writers. But boy, when I find them, I feature them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've done that with both of these ladies, and I just find the workings of the mind absolutely unbelievable. I mean, every single one of these writers,
yeah,
every single one of them, have a particular style. You have the teleplays, you have poems, you have the scripts, you have the sci-fi, you have the horror. I mean, there's all of this uniqueness with every single one of them. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I just don't know how in the world they go to sleep at night after they write this stuff. I mean, some of it. It's just amazing. But
That Lisa Martin story about the spiders scared me, because spiders do scare me. And she was trapped down in the basement with all these spiders. And then she comes back upstairs. And the last line of the story, we realize that all the people in the room around her are slowly turning into spiders. And I thought, oh, God, that is utterly chilling. You know, that is really scary. So, we tried to make a book that would fit all tastes, a little bit of science fiction, a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of horror, a little bit of humor, a little bit of a play, a teleplay, a part of a screenplay, some drawing, some artwork. We said we don't want a book that's just one kind of a book. We want to make a book that's unique, that's different, including the typeface, from going from a script face to a typeface of a teleplay to regular print and then back to a teleplay. We wanted the book to look exciting and energized, and so that you never knew what you were going to find when you turned the next page. Yeah, we got some really good reviews on it, and Jason and I are going to do a follow-up book, The Devil's Coattails, that we're working on right now.
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, it's absolutely a delight catching up with you. Now, I'd like for you to give us your website, because if you're wanting to be a writer, if this is something you'd like to check out, you've got a collection of very, very renowned writers here, each very specialized in their own areas. And boy, I'd say save the book for Halloween. That's my bias, because man alive, will it keep you awake.
Well, yeah, as I said, they can contact J. Sonny Productions, or they can go to William F. Nolan. That's all one word in small letters, WilliamFNolan.com on the Internet, and you'll see my homepage is up there with J. Sonny Productions. They're handling my site, and so you can find them on my WilliamFNolan.com, and they'll show you how to order the book. I would love to have Bleeding Edge picked up by a lot of people, because I think it's a good book. It deserves a wide readership, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, I'll tell you, it's quite an accomplishment, and it's just another one to add to this small pile that you've been accumulating through the years of your own works. But, Bill, thank you so much for being my guest, and I want my listeners again to know that if you're not familiar with Logan's Run, go to your local movie store, check it out. It is a cult classic. It'll blow you away. If you've never seen it, it will amaze you. And, of course, they're coming out with a new version, which is going to be quite amazing, because instead of being 30 years old for Extermination, 21 years old is what it's going to be.
Right.
And I didn't know that. So you learn something every time you talk with Bill Nolan, who is the man that started it all, and all of these other authors in The Bleeding Edge. That is the name of the book. Bill Nolan, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you.
Enjoyed it very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Maris Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reigned. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would just be delighted to do that. Call in to the worldwide toll-free number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. That's all it takes. And then I'll tell you what I perceive. And then you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. Somebody sent me this cute story, and I just have to share it with you. There was an interview being conducted with an 80-year-old lady, and the local news station host was wanting to interview her because she'd just gotten married, and she'd gotten married for the fourth time. Well, the host really was curious, and he asked her questions about her life and what it felt like to be marrying again at 80, and then about her new husband's occupation. So she sweetly says in her 80-year-old voice, he's a funeral director. And then, you know, the host goes, wow, that's really interesting. And then he asks her if she wouldn't mind telling him a little about her first three husbands and what they did for a living. Well, she paused for a few moments, rolled her little 80-year-old eyes to reflect as she was thinking really, really hard. And a smile suddenly appeared on her face, and she answered this question so proudly, explaining that she had first married a banker when she was in her early 20s, then a circus ringmaster when she was in her 40s. Later on, she married a preacher in her 60s, and now in her 80s, a funeral director. Well, the young host looked at her and was rather surprised and asked why she married four men with such diverse careers. Well, she had an answer for that right off the bat. She said, I married one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, and four to go. Oh, I know it's so bad, but I couldn't pass it up. I just thought that was so cute. I could just see the whole thing. I just love it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, you'll hear during the program the promotion for the Renaissance Midsummer Fair that's occurring here in Buckley, Washington, and it's starting tomorrow, and I'm so excited. I've been involved with these people for over 10 years. This is a marvelous event, and it's one where you can take the family. There's something for everyone. And by the way, they're going to have ATM machines there, too, if you want to have cash. That's going to be readily available, but I want you to know the events going on, the jousting. There's just going to be perfect weather this weekend. It is absolutely awesome. Come in costume. It's terrific. Be sure you look for my booth that has huge yellow banners with gigantic red lions on the banners. That's my booth. I hope you'll come in and say hello. For those of you who are in the state of Washington, I'd love to meet you and to be able to show you some of the books that I'm going to have. I'm going to be doing many consultations there for people. It is absolutely going to be a fabulous event. So that's Saturday and Sunday this weekend and the following two weekends. We are going to be having someone come up and talk about the Ren Fair sometime during the next few weeks before it ends. Anyway, give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. five, six. Now, hey, get your pad of paper and pen handy because I have got an avocado recipe. I love guacamole. Well, we've got lots of different recipes for guacamole, but it's pretty simple. But I thought I'd also share with you a little bit of the history about the dull-looking avocado. Now, I was born and raised in California, and avocados, oh, they're just a must. I love them, even to this day. And California has some of the finest avocado orchards anywhere, and of course, they also come in from Mexico and South America. However, I was not aware that there was such a unique history about avocados. You know, at one time, that this fruit, yes, it's a fruit, was once reserved only for royalty. Well, today people take it for granted. They have it in omelets, they have it in all sandwiches, all kinds of things. I just like the avocado plain with a little bit of lemon juice or lime juice and salt and pepper. That's my favorite way of eating it. Now, historians say that avocados were first cultivated to the best of their knowledge in southern Mexico in 1519. The Aztec Emperor Montezuma presented them, Montezuma II, presented them as prize offerings to the Spanish explorer group, and Hernando Cortez was the leader of that group. Now, there is an avocado you might see in your local store. We see them here in the Pacific Northwest. It's called the Hass avocado, and it was developed in the 1930s in the La Habra Heights in California, where they say there was a mother tree planted, and it was tended by a postman whose name was Rudolf Hass. So today, this mother tree had a lot of babies because 95% of the commercial crop today is with Hass avocados, and by 1970, the one-time cottage industry of growing avocados had morphed into a large-scale affair. And California leads the nation in avocado production. Well, of course, the weather and everything there is so perfect for it. And get this, it's projected for this year that they will produce 450 million pounds of avocados. And most commercially grown domestic avocados come from the part of the state from San Luis Obispo down to the Mexican border. And San Diego County produces about 60% of what we consume here in America, and Florida grows only 9%. So there is a lot of history behind the lowly avocado. And again, it's nothing pretty to look at because it's got a bumpy skin. And when you get it, when you pick it, it's green. But when it's ripe, it's purplishly black. But I'll tell you, I've cut into some avocados that were purple black, and they were hard as rocks. So you need to very gently press on the skin to see if an avocado is ripe. And here is a recipe for a guacamole that I think is wonderful. Now, I want you to know something about the avocado. Yes, it has oil in it, but it is so healthy. And ladies, it is marvelous for keeping beautiful skin, beautiful complexion. And the avocado, yes, it has calories, but it's healthy for you. It really, really is healthy for you. So let me give you this recipe because it is absolutely delightful. And it's one medium tomato. You finely dice it, which amounts up to about a cup. And if it's a ripe tomato, that's even better. That adds more flavor instead of one that's hard as a brick. That's what we get every once in a while up here in the Pacific Northwest. You're going to need about a half of a small red onion, and you want to dice this really finely, and that's about 3 tablespoons finely, finely diced. Then you're going to need one half cup of coarsely chopped fresh cilantro, and fresh is better than dried. Go with the fresh. 3 tablespoons of fresh lime juice, 3 tablespoons of fresh lime juice, 1/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, a little bit of kosher salt, and you're going to need about 1 pound, and which is about 2 large half avocados. And you cut them into 1/2-inch dices. And what you do, you just mix the tomato with the onion, cilantro, the lime juice, the pepper, and the salt, and you let those ingredients sit for about 5 minutes. You want the flavors to mellow a little bit. And then, just before you serve it, add your avocado and gently mash it into the tomato mixture with a fork, and it'll make about 2.5 cups of salsa. Let me tell you, this disappears in like about 2 minutes. It's gone. You can serve it with fresh vegetables. You can serve it with toast. You can serve it with chips, which typically is the favorite way of eating it. But I will tell you, it is delicious. Now, I want you to know I learned something about helping avocados to ripen. This I did not know. Put them in a brown paper bag and leave them alone for 2 to 5 days. They will ripen beautifully. And the skin will just, when you press it down very gently with the thumb, you will find that it gently gives to that pressure, and it will just be perfectly ripe. And what you need to know is if you want to make it ripen faster, add an apple or a banana to the bag. And then once your avocados are ripe, whatever you do, don't leave them out. You want to make sure you put them right in the refrigerator. Otherwise, the inside, it will start to turn. And it doesn't look pretty. Believe me, I've done that. So they're wonderful, they're healthy, and oh, they just, avocados just taste wonderful. That's my bias. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Well, I have a little bit of information here on social media, 4 tips that I think you might be interested in because all of you obviously are very computer savvy. It's important to understand, especially with young kids, but even adults, you have to think before you put information up on the web in any way, shape, or form. My goodness, the security breaches that are occurring today are mind-boggling, and there's a lot of people out there that have all kinds of little viruses that are trying to find you. So when I come back, we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. I want you to know I'm going to be sharing this with you, and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and we'll take it from there. But if you'd like to chat with me, I will talk with you at 888-815-9756. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Okay, next week we have got a tremendous lineup of guests, as we always do on the Donna Sebo Show. On Monday, we're going to be talking about Qigong. Qigong can be very healing. It is also an exercise. And we have a Qigong master, Padam Shohai, who is going to be with us on Monday talking to us about this awesome DVD series that he has. Then Jonathan Goldman, who has been a guest on my show before. Jonathan is a master of musical sounds and healing modalities with sounds. He's just wonderful. And he had to cancel a previous interview because of a conflict that had come up, but we're able to have him back on Tuesday, and I'm looking forward to that. Then Joseph A. Williams took on a task and has written a story that is titled, Who Do You See in the Mirror? Today, we are dealing with so many aspects of corruption, poor ethics, lack of responsibility. There is so much that is wrong. John says we have a way of fixing it. This is a marvelous publication. And then we're going to be traveling with Diane Perrier. Yes, you want to travel with this lady because she's done a lot of research. History about the freeways and the byways and highways of the United States. It is amazing what she was able to find out. This is something that if you were traveling with kids and you wanted to just keep them looking for things, this is a book that would be awesome, both for the adults as well as youngsters. That's next Thursday, and then a week from today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Rypuk, who has put out a book that I think is absolutely incredible. It's called The 30-Day Diabetes Cure. This is a physician who has taken it upon himself to say, we can cure diabetes, and it can be done via nutrition. So if you, like me, know a lot of people that have to deal with this, we lost a family member a few years back who had diabetes so severe he got gangrene and there was nothing they could do about it. So his last period of time was really a very difficult period of time and came with a lot of pain. So this is something that I think is worthy finding out about. Great guests, wonderful lineup of subject matter, I hope that you'll join me. I want to share with you before I go into the techie stuff, this, you've got mail? Yes. What would you think about a first-class piece of mail? You go to your mailbox, and to your amazement, you see a critter peeking out of an envelope. Well, that's exactly what happened in Cambridge, England. That's right. There was a mailman, Robert Mayer, who just was astonished to see a little hamster peeping out of an envelope that not only had been stamped, but was marked, do not bin. Now, we're not talking about a padded envelope. We're talking about an ordinary envelope. And he took this little creature to a veterinarian and said, and the veterinarian checked the animal out, said, this little creature, how in the world did it get through the post offices with all the machines and all the stamping and all the various things? Well, this little guy survived, a little hamster. He survived. And they believe that this little hamster was about a year old, and they just are amazed that he survived the journey through the complex postal system. So you can get mail, and sometimes there may be something in it you had never dreamed you'd ever expect, like a little hamster. And they nicknamed the little hamster First Class, which I thought was very appropriate for that little person. All right, we are going to share some tips with you about social media safety. And this is really so very, very important. There are so many of us who are really wanting to use social tools like Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of these different arenas for social networking. But there are those creatures that are called entrepreneurial thieves. Mm-hmm. They are out there on the hunt. And cybercrime, well, it's gone far beyond identity theft. It is now gone to the point of actually staking out people, It's really amazing what has evolved. So these are our 4 points. The first one is avoid sharing vital information. You have to remember if you reveal your birthday, your home address, family members' names, pets' names, details that are not only used by financial institutions as identifying information, but also by burglars as they build dossiers. Doesn't that make you feel good that somebody might have a dossier on you that you didn't know anything about? Well, there is a specialist who works with Trend Micro. His name is Yamas Yaneza. He said users inadvertently share too much information at times, crumbs as it were. Thieves have all the time in the world to piece all of these little things together. It's sort of like individuals that like solving mysteries. That's exactly what they do. Also, that you need to not announce your whereabouts. In other words, do not give out information about where you're going and, you know, where you can be found. The reason this is, they said in 2009, there was a big report on how a particular man was robbed, and he had talked up his travel plans. He was talking on Twitter to someone. So those are factors we need to remember. And social networking sites encourage users to post real-time updates about daily life. And a lot of people do that. They will just express themselves right there, and there's no such thing as security when you do this. Also, don't broadcast if you're going to be traveling, your itinerary, or any plans to attend social events like weddings and concerts. Said, remember, if someone is staking you out, they are going to have the opportunity to figure out when you're not going to be home. Also, you want to be careful about posting photographs. Now, you may just enjoy sharing your photographs online, but resist the urge to post pictures of new purchases and expensive gifts, which show that you have stuff worth stealing. And global positioning systems, well, Matthew Honan demonstrated how even photo sharing sites like Flickr can be gold mines for clever criminals. And this is something that was shared by someone. They said, because the card in my camera automatically added location data to my photos, anyone who cared to look at my Flickr page could see my computers, my super-duper bicycle, and my huge flat-screen TV, all pinpointed on an online photo map. And he said, with a few clicks, you could get driving directions right to my place, and with a few more, you could get the black gloves and a local pick to use on the door to be delivered right to the house. So you need to be really aware. Social networking is great, but if you're too trusting, it can blur the line between public and private conversations. So beware. Beware. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. Have an absolutely awesome week. Remember, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take care. God bless. We'll be back with you same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.